G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast, the podcast that's all about intermittent fasting. I'm your host, Graham Curry from Perth, Australia. I lost 60 kilograms or 132 pounds living an intermittent fasting lifestyle and have successfully maintained that weight loss. I'm also the author of the Amazon category best-selling book, The Fasting Highway, which will give you a great insight into what it's actually like to live it day to day, how to get started, what it's about, what are some of the health benefits that come from it, and how to turn it into a successful long-term lifestyle. In this series of podcasts, you'll be hearing from people from all over the world, from the beginners to the experienced and those that are on the journey. You'll also be hearing from some leaders in the intermittent fasting community, and you'll also be hearing from some past guests as we recheck in to see how they've been going. And thank you for joining us here on the Fasting Highway. Enjoy the show. G'day, and welcome to the Fasting Highway podcast. And this is episode 106. And just before we get to today's exciting guest, I just wanted to give a big shout out to the Fasting Highway Facebook group members out there listening. Thank you for all your support. Our group has grown to some plus 5,000 members now. It's a global group represented in 71 countries, over 100 cities. So thank you for the support that you've been giving us here on the Fasting Highway. Okay, let's get to today's amazing guest. We're going to be talking to the one and only New York Times best-selling author, Jin Stevens. And Jin has written a few books on IF, including Delay, Don't Deny, and Fast, Feast, Repeat. It's just written a recent book that's just come out, which isn't an IF book as such, but it's called Cleanish, and Jin's going to tell us all about that today. She's also going to tell us about her U community and what she's doing these days, and also a little bit about the background of her own intermittent fasting journey over the last several years. So here to tell us all about that is the amazing Jin Stevens. Oh, g'day, Jin, and welcome to the Fasting Highway, and thank you for joining me today.
Well, I'm so glad to be here talking to you again, Graham.
It's great to have you here, and you're great. We really thank you for all the work that you do. But, Jin, what I thought we might do, I mean, many, many people know you around the world. They know your story. They know you're an author. They know you had a fantastic Facebook community. You ran up to nearly 500,000 people and built over a few years. But a lot of people may not know that you actually really lived this journey. And just tell us a bit about that and what sort of led up to the Facebook groups and into your first book, Delay, Don't Deny.
Okay, glad to talk about that, that whole backstory. You know, like many of your listeners, but I'm sure, yeah, I struggled with weight. And so, you know, I started being interested in the subject of diets really before I needed one. My mother was a dance teacher and always dieted, always trying to get that dancer body. But I mean, we're not built dancer body wise. You know, our genetics were not in our favor. We have, you know, we're more pear shaped. So, but she was always didn't like her body, always critical of her body. And so I kind of internalized that dieting is just what we do as we get older. Women are supposed to diet. So I did my first diet when I came home from my freshman year of college and had put on the freshman 15. And, you know, back in those days, it was, you know, calorie counting. And then over the years, you know, I could always take the weight off until I started getting older, started having kids. Then that yo-yo started to be higher ups. You know, the yo-yo, if you think about it as a graph, you know, you're going up and then you go down some, then you go up higher than you were before and then down some more. And I was constantly chasing the next best diet. You know, I was very diet focused. If I, you know, sometimes when I was like, well, I'm not happy with my weight, I would go to Amazon and I would, you know, look at the weight loss category and see if there was something new, something that was going to work this time, right? So over the years, I really read everything in my quest to try to lose the weight once and for all. And of course, I discovered intermittent fasting along the way. 2009 to 2014 were the years I was still really, really struggling. And, you know, I would dabble in this intermittent fasting approach or that intermittent fasting approach, depending on what I'd read. You know, the every other day diet, Krista Verity was out. There was a Dr. Johnson who had an alternate daily fasting plan. 5-2 was happening in England, thanks to Dr. Michael Mosley, who worked from Christa Verde's work. And then there was Bert Hearing, and he was really the only one talking about a daily eating window at that time until David Zeminko actually came out with the 8-hour diet. And so I would dabble in each of those a little bit. And then also Brad Pilon and his Eat, Stop, Eat, where you would have like a 24-hour fast a couple times a week or something like that. The thing is, I never really treated them like a lifestyle. I never let my body fully adjust. So I would, you know, dabble in the every other day diet for a week. And then I'd be like, yeah, I'm not losing any weight. Forget it. Or I would, you know, try to have a 5-hour eating window, and I would do it for, I don't know, a week. And then I would stop because I was hangry and it was too hard, and I would quit. And I also never saw the quick weight loss. One thing about all those crazy diets that came along, they gave us a lot quicker weight loss, right? So I was always really attracted to those. You're like, oh, I can, you know, eat all that I want all day long as I just eat this magical food that they tell me to eat in this book or whatever. And, you know, I would lose the weight quickly, and then it would rebound even more quickly. So finally in 2014, there was a period of time right before that when I kind of gave up. The book I had read during that period was The Intuitive Eating book. And there were a few books about that out at the time. The idea of mindful eating and intuitive eating, they really resonated with me, as did intermittent fasting. I did not want to be so ruled by thoughts of food and what to eat and you know, trying to find magical food, like I said. So I was like, I'm just going to be an intuitive eater. And they teach you to ask yourself, am I hungry? And so I would ask myself, am I hungry? And the answer was always yes. Yes, I'm hungry. So I, you know, during that period of time, I got bigger and bigger. So in 2000, I wasn't weighing at all, because they're like, you got to disconnect yourself from the scale. Don't weigh. Just eat. Love your body. And I'm like, that's what I'm going to do. I embraced all of that. Until I went on that family cruise in 2014 that a lot of people have heard me talk about before, because that was really my turning point. We were visiting the Mayan ruins and hiking in the beautiful, forest, and climbing up the ruins. And it was hard to move my body. You know, we'd been on that cruise ship. I was eating 3 meals a day in the cruise ship dining room, because I'm like, I paid for this cruise. I'm getting these meals. I'm going to eat all of them. They're, you know, like, we would have breakfast in the dining room, and then like a few hours later, it was time for the lunch. But there I was having, you know, the soup course and the whatever. I can't even imagine it, but I felt awful. And so when I looked at those photos, I didn't even really recognize myself. I was like, you know, I could tell, you could tell by looking at the family photo. There we were. It was formal night, getting ready to go to dinner. And you could tell I was miserable in that photo. I was trying to smile and you know, having a good time, but I felt so bad in my body. And I came home and got the scale down off the shelf, and I stepped on it, and it said 210 pounds, which was the highest weight I'd ever seen. And I was officially obese. So, you know, I really feel like I needed to get to that point, or I maybe if I'd have just, you know, been in the slightly overweight category, I might have just been okay with it. Maybe I'm, you know, just happily going through life, slightly overweight, still trying diets, but, you know, living with it. But I had to be obese to real and feeling terrible to really say, I never want to feel this way in my body ever again. So I'm very grateful for that period of time in my life, because it helps me appreciate every day, you know, that I can cross my legs, I can sit on the floor, I can paint my toenails, I can, you know, see all of my body parts without this big belly in the way, like it had been when I had all, you know, the abdominal obesity was terrible. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to do it this time. And that was what led me back to intermittent fasting. And from 2014 to 2015, I lost the 75 pounds that was my initial goal, and went on to lose about another 5 pounds. So I lost about 80 pounds overall. And I've been maintaining the loss since 2015. And that's just amazing, because it has never happened to me before in my life that I would ever lose the weight. I mean, I have been this size before. There was a period of time when I was taking diet pills in the early 2000s that I got from the doctor, and I was able to get to around this same weight. And as long as I took the diet pills, I could keep the weight off. You know, I have a few clothes that I kept from that period of time, and they actually fit me really differently. Like the jeans that I wore, they were from the Gap. They were size 6 from the Gap, and I bought them in maybe 2002, 2003, and I can put them on now so many years later, you know, as a much older woman, and they're actually loose around the waist. You know, my waist is slimmer now at 52 than it was in, you know, 2002, 2003. So it's just amazing to me. I'm not taking supplements. I'm not restricting the foods that I love. I'm not counting anything. I really don't even stress about time anymore. I just open my window when it feels right, and I stop eating when I've had enough. And it just, finally, I'm that intuitive eater that I wanted to be all those years ago. But I think the constant dieting, all the diet foods, the diet sodas, you know, my insulin was always high. And I really, my satiety signals were all out of whack. I couldn't answer the question, am I hungry? The answer was always yes. But now I know the answer to that question. So, you know, the combination of intermittent fasting and then tuning into my body has really been magical for me.
Yeah, that's fantastic, Jen. And a great summation of your journey with intermittent fasting. And I think for me, maintenance has been the real proof in the pudding, if you like, that intermittent fasting works, because after a couple of years, I'm now going into my third year of maintenance, something 2 kilos or about 4.4 pounds a range that you sort of go within and I try to keep within. And so for you with maintenance, what's been sort of the success with it, do you think? I mean, how do you fast in maintenance that you were doing differently to when you're actually losing the 80 pounds?
Well, you know, it's been so long. You know, I've been in maintenance now for 7 years. Which is like, that had literally never happened in my life. There is no period of time when season after season I put on the same clothes. And the only reason I need to buy new clothes is because the old ones are wearing out or no longer in style. That's the shocking part, finally. I'm like one of those women that has clothes that are out of style because they still fit me. But the difference is, you know, I've got my Honesty pants. I'm wearing my Honesty jeans today. You know, they're size 0 from the Loft, which, okay, vanity sizing. I'm not a 0 everywhere. Definitely not. But, you know, I bought these jeans. I think this pair of jeans I'm wearing, I might have bought in maybe 2017. And they still fit me. You know, I've been through menopause now through you know, at the age of 52. That happened over the past couple of years and right on schedule. And to be able to go through menopause and not see, you know, the typical weight gain, that's been remarkable. I didn't know what would happen with menopause. I mean, I love intermittent fasting, but I'm like, you know, biology is powerful and hormones are powerful. So, you know, my experience might not be everyone's experience, you know, the stress of the pandemic and all that we've been going through. But I really just, you know, I don't weigh. I haven't gotten on the scale. I can never remember exactly what year it was. So the last time I got on the scale, was it 2017? I can't remember. But the last time I weighed myself, you know, I don't know what that number is. I have not seen a number on a scale since then. But I know what my body is doing. There have been periods of time where I'm like, oop, you know, I'm getting a little, I can tell in the pants. And then I just become a little more mindful for a little while. And it makes a difference. You know, over the holidays, it's natural to feel a little fluffier in the midsection. And then, you know, as time goes on, back to my normal schedule, it just, everything just kind of falls back into place. So I really haven't had to stress about it. You know, I feel like I'm not as lean as I was maybe in 2018 when I retired from teaching, if I look back. But, you know, in 2018, I was working all day on my feet as a teacher, and I didn't eat till I came home at 4:30 or 5 even. And now I'm a little more relaxed. So I'm just, you know, living a life that I enjoy. And I'm not stressing about like, oh my gosh, I was leaner in 2018. I need to diet to get back to that, because I'm living the life in the body that feels good to me. So I don't need the feedback of that scale number anymore, thank goodness. And I'm not stressed about any of it, because if you live the life you enjoy and you nourish your body well and you feel good in your body, that's what really matters. And that's where I am. And it sounds like that's where you are too.
Yeah, pretty much. And I think the longer you go in maintenance too, Jen, you do become a bit more of an intuitive faster, if you right. like. Where you don't sort of have the really strict set protocols, you're looking at clocks or whatever. And I tend to find that now I'm just eating to my truer hunger signals. And, you know, it might be, I always try to get over 16 or 18 hours every single day. But there'll be days where there might be a bit shorter, and there'll be days where it'll be a bit longer, depending on how I feel. But I'm past that point of it has to be 22 and 2, or it has to be 21 and 3. because for me, the longevity of intermittent fasting lifestyle, I should say, has to be flexible. It has to be sustainable. And there are days where you just think, you know what, I really need to eat now. And it's really about listening to our bodies, isn't it?
It really is. It really is about listening to your body. And over time, you know, you don't need the strictness. But I mean, there might be a time like when we were having the pandemic and I, you know, I was a little more flexible and we didn't know, like at the beginning, the early days when we didn't know what was happening. And I remember I was doing more baking. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, you know what? I've really flexed it a little too much. It's time to have some boundaries. So I actually pulled the fasting app back out. Just for a very brief period of time, like a few weeks, because I needed that structure in a world that felt like there was no structure. It's like, all right, I'm back to the structure. So, you know, that was 5 years into maintenance. And I pulled that structure out just a little bit because I suddenly needed it for a very brief period of time. And now I've let that go again. But it's just a matter of, you know, you really tune into your body and you know, you're like, yeah, I know I've been a, like, I had a very flexible December over the holidays. I traveled, I ate, drank, and was merry. At no time did I, you know, outgrow my clothes or anything. And so I just, you know, keep my eye on that and balance it out. And so I've had a really busy January so far. And so it's been natural to have, you know, push my eating window a little bit later just because I'm busy. And so it makes more sense to open my window later and have a little bit of a shorter window here and there.
Yeah. And we know that you can't put on 3 or 4 pounds of fat overnight, Jen. And that's where we see a lot of people in the group say they beat themselves up about, you know, not quite being on track or doing something. And they say, oh, I hate myself. I'm doing all this. And it's really important to have that self-love and self-care and giving ourselves grace. And knowing that this is a lifestyle and we have the rest of our lives to do it, you just go straight back to your fasting protocol and you don't have to do things like 40 or 50 hour fast because you ate a few donuts on the weekend. You know what I mean?
And our bodies don't gain or lose weight that quickly. So that's just really important to understand. If you get on the scale and you're down 5 pounds from yesterday, you did not lose 5 pounds of fat overnight. And if you get on the scale and you weigh 5 pounds more, you didn't gain 5 pounds of fat overnight. So really understanding your fluctuations and what triggers them is key. Like when I was weighing every single day, when I was losing weight, I started to notice, like, for example, patterns around my cycle. My weight always did a predictable thing around my cycle every single time. There was a period of time when it went up and then that it went down and it wasn't fat. It was just the way my body retained water over that period of time. And so, you know, understanding that helps you to realize you don't need to play games to get the scale to do things. It's just you do things over time and then the scale will reflect that eventually, knowing your trend. That's why weighing daily with weekly averaging or now an app. I probably now would just use an app like Happy Scale, but I liked writing it on the paper and doing the math and seeing it right there at the end of the week. But an app like Happy Scale will just give you you can see your graph and the color. If it's green, it shows you the trend is down, even if your weights are going up and down. And that's what's so important because you've got to find a way to not feel like you're failing, you know, and that scale being up 3 pounds, you're like, woo, I'm failing. But really, it's just a natural fluctuation. Now, over time, if the scale is trending upward, that still doesn't mean you're, quote, failing, but that's the data that needs to let you know, okay, what I'm doing right now is causing my body to gain weight instead of, you know, what I'm hoping for. So, you know, being honest instead of judgmental, I think is the key. We tend to just judge ourselves as, oh, I'm bad. I did a bad thing. My weight is bad. I'm a failure. Instead of just, you know, disconnecting and using it as data. Like if it were a friend of yours and you were helping them and mentoring them, you'd be like, all right, well, let's see what we can do now. And you would not say, oh, you're such a bad failure to your friend. So don't say that to yourself.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's that self-examination and honesty with yourself, isn't it? That you reach in and you say, well, okay, this is what I did. I know what I did. Tomorrow is a you day. You know, I know that I'm going to be great tomorrow. I just have to get back on it and just keep going. And I think you got to trust the process. And you do have to flip the switch because when you first start, intermittent fasting isn't easy for everybody. I mean, we often hear people say, oh, yeah, I started as easy and all that. But for some people, it's not because you have to rewire with the whole thought process of how you eat. And for some people like me, I was a food addict. I was eating 20 times a day. all of a sudden I was eating once a day. And I remember when I first heard about intermittent fasting, just before I struck Delay Don't Deny, I thought it was the most craziest thing I've ever heard of in my life. I thought, who does that? Eats once a day. Did you ever think, going back way back then, when you first found out about intermittent fasting, did you have any sort of worries or concerns about it, Jen, way back then?
Well, you know, it's funny when I go back and think about it through my diet brain, my goal was, honestly, I would like make like charts and like plans and how I was going to do it. I thought I wanted to figure out the intermittent fasting plan that would allow me to eat the most often and for the longest period of time. Yeah, you know, I wanted to like, I don't know if the word game the system is right, but like I wanted to figure out what's the maximum time I could do this and still. It's just kind of funny to think about because I no longer think that way at all. And then like, you know, I feel like an 8-hour window is going to be what I want. And then if I need to, I can tighten it up if I'm start. Instead, it just letting all that go and based on what feels good and all that. Like it sounds so crazy to think that like my average window could be 3 hours or some nonsense like that. It sounded like nonsense at the time when I was, you know, if I go back to my 2012 self, for example, like who's going to only eat in a 3-hour window or 2-hour window? That's ridiculous. Who could live that way? But then realizing that it's so freeing to do that and not have to stress about the food. So, you know, even when I have what feels like a really long window, like this past a weekend ago, I went on a short trip, day trip with family, and we had brunch at 11. And I had brunch at 11, and then I had dinner later when I got back home with my family. And so my window felt like this crazy. I was like, I have been eating all day. And I counted it up, and it was like 7.5 hours. That really wasn't that long. So it's funny how you change over time and what you think of as weird or that I could never do that. Then suddenly you're like, man, I could never go back to the other way.
Yeah. And speaking about changing over time, Jen, when you think about it, when you first started to now, obviously our food tastes change, right? We gravitate towards that high quality food as a natural progression with fasting. Well, I think most people do anyway, maybe not everybody, but for you, is the types of food that you eat now very different to what they were when you first started?
It's completely different, you know, because remember, I had been on that diet roller coaster for so many years, and I had tried, if there is a diet plan where you restrict certain foods, I had done that diet. And of course, anything that came around before 2014, if it was invented after 2014, I didn't do that diet, which is amazing. People are like, have you tried the whatever? And I'm like, no, I didn't read that when it came out after 2014. But when I started intermittent fasting it was really August of 2014 when I was like, I'm just going to do intermittent fasting now, because I had gone back to keto. When I first got off that cruise ship, I'd done the crazy HCG diet again, like that I tried before, and then I couldn't stick with that. And so then you're supposed to do low carb to set those losses, which was a failure. And so I was like, I'm just going to be keto. I never want to restrict again. So I did keto the entire summer of 2014, and I didn't lose a pound. I went up a little bit, but I had just done that crazy restrictive diet before then. So that was, you know, of course, regaining that. But I had done the keto, and I was like, I never want to restrict what I'm eating again, because I felt so awful that whole time. You know, my body needs high quality carbs. So I was like, I'm just going to do the fasting. So I started intermittent fasting, reintroduced all the foods, and immediately started to lose weight. Finally, I was taking my weekly average. I was losing at about the rate of about a pound a week. So, you know, my weekly averages were going down over time. And I'm like, this is working. So I was so happy not to be restricting foods that I really leaned into the whole eat whatever you want idea. And we ate a lot of fast food. I was a busy teacher. I also taught, I taught all day. And then 2 days a week, I stayed after school and taught extra. I taught adults, you know, other teachers in the gifted endorsement programs. And then I also taught online for like two different online universities. I don't know what I was doing. I've always been very, very busy. So I basically had three jobs, and we were just eating whatever. And so I ate a lot of fast food, a lot of takeout, a lot of microwave things, like, you know, Stouffer's is a brand we have here in the United States. Do y'all have that there in Australia?
No, don't know it. No.
Okay, well, they have these family dinners, like Stouffer's lasagna. And I'm like, ah, this is just as good as homemade. No, that's crazy talk now. But at the time, you know, I was really, my palate was in tune with ultra-processed foods. That's what I like. It was working for me. I was losing the weight. My tastes really didn't change. But then in the, after I wrote Delayed on Deny and started the Facebook groups and we started having, you know, like the diet wars, I like to call them. That's when people come in and they're like, well, if you're not eating keto, you're doing it wrong. Or if you're eating, you know, whatever, you're doing it wrong. If you're not a vegetarian, you're doing it wrong. And so people started to really argue about my diet is better than your diet. And it was quite contentious in those days, especially it was kind of the early days, you know, right around 2016, 2017. Keto was growing in popularity along with intermittent fasting. So a lot of people were combining the two for the first time. Because when I was doing keto in 2014, people weren't talking about intermittent fasting. It was really when the obesity code came out and then people started to put the two things together. And, you know, Dr. Fung and Jimmy Moore, who was also in the low carb community. So the low carb and intermittent fasting kind of became like, if you're doing one, you got to do them both. But then there were people like me that weren't doing low carb and having amazing results. So that's when I was like, you know, there's got to be a reason why, you know, the same foods don't make us all feel great. And that is when I, the summer of 2017, I decided to research that. I'm like, there's got to be science for which one is, quote, better. So I did the research for Feast Without Fear, which is my second self-published book. I wrote it over the summer of 2017. It came out in the fall, like September of 2017. And when I was writing that book, I was looking at everything, all the research on all the different ways of eating, whether it was low carb, low fat, Mediterranean, whatever. And it led me to this TED talk that I talk about in that book. I talk about it in Fast, Feast, Repeat. And I'm not sure if I talked about it in Cleanish or not. I can't remember. I've written a lot of things now. But it was the TED talk. Aaron Segal is the guy's name. He's a researcher out of Israel. And the name of the TED Talk, you can still search for it on YouTube, is like, what is the best diet for humans or something? And this was the first time I had ever heard the idea that we really are all different. They were having participants eat different foods and then testing their blood sugar response. And basically, in a nutshell, they found that people had vastly different blood glucose responses or glycemic responses to identical foods. Like, we've all been sold the idea that the glycemic index is one size fits all. And here's the glycemic index for corn. And here's the glycemic index for ice cream. And here's the glycemic index for white bread, right? And if you just follow that, you'll know what your blood sugar is going to do. Well, that is a lie. It turns out the glycemic index was created by like taking a very small group of people, like maybe 10 people for this food, and finding what their blood sugar did and then coming up with the average. Well, that's just as dumb as saying, well, every woman is 5'6" because we averaged all the women together and 5'6" is the average. So if you're a woman, you're 5'6". Now we know that's not how it works. We know there's people who are taller than 5'6" and shorter than 5'6". And it turns out our glycemic response is just as varying. There are people who have a terrible glycemic response to ice cream, whereas another person, same exact ice cream, has a very steady glycemic response to that. And so it has to do with a lot of things. Your gut microbiome turns out to be the most important. There's some genetics that come into play as well, but your gut microbiome is very, very important. And so when I learned that, I was like, well, here is freedom. You don't have to follow someone else's diet because their diet, like if someone wrote a diet book about here's what to eat and when to eat it, that's what worked really well for their unique body. Your body might be so very different from theirs. And so that book opened my mind to, guess what? There really is not one best way of eating. But it also opened my eye to the importance of the gut microbiome. I had heard about the importance of the gut microbiome before through the context of, I guess if you were lucky enough to have a good gut microbiome, you were more likely to be slim. And if you had a bad one, you were more likely to be overweight. And that helped me feel a little bit better knowing that, you know, maybe it wasn't my fault because, you know, you and me both, when you're obese, you feel a lot of guilt and blame and like, I'm so weak. I am terrible. I can't. Why am I so heavy? But when you realize, you know, gosh, if you have an unhealthy gut microbiome, it's really hard to lose weight. You know, they were talking about fecal transplants, and if they give someone, you know, the fecal transplant from someone who's obese, that person gained weight. And so it's like, wow, that's really important. So I learned how important it was to feed your gut microbiome well. And so my goal became, after writing Feast Without Fear, to listen to my body and see what foods made me feel good and to nourish my gut well. So I started introducing more vegetables, you know, more foods, you know, more variety of things, because that's what the research on the gut microbiome showed me, is that to have a healthy gut, you have to feed it the foods that will nourish the healthy gut microbiome. And, you know, it's probably no surprise to you, but the way to make your gut super duper unhealthy is to eat the standard American diet of ultra-processed foods. That feeds the bad gut microbiome, and then they drive your cravings. Like, the worse your gut composition is, the worse your cravings are going to be. So you kind of have to fight against that for a while. You're feeding, you're trying to nourish the good gut bacteria, and then over time, your cravings will change. But if you never feed the good stuff, then your cravings might not change. So it's not really just magical, like all of a sudden one day I woke up and I wanted to eat better foods. I was also putting better foods down and I started to like them better. And so I really think that as my gut changed, my cravings changed, because the good gut microbiome was craving, you know, the stuff that helped it thrive. So it was really a process. But the better I ate, the better I felt. And again, this was all, when I say better, it was without judgment. You know, there's never been a time that I'm like, I'm never going to go to McDonald's ever again. And that's where the ish and cleanish comes in, because, you know, there is no perfection. And we're going to eat the things, sometimes the things that satisfy a different kind of craving besides, you know, nourishing our bodies. And that's okay too, because we're very complex. We're not just a body. We also have emotions, and we like pleasure and things that taste good. So it really was a process for me over time. And I had to start eating higher quality foods to start to crave those foods.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, Jen. And I really love Feast Without Fear. And I'll be quite honest with you, that's one of my favorite books of yours, because it really taught me a lot. Not only that message about Feast Without Fear, but the gut you talked about. And I learned so much about gut health through that book. And yeah, I remember at the time, and it came at the right time too, because I did go through a few stages early in my journey where I think I told you that story before. I went out for dinner with my wife, and my wife said, oh, let's get some dessert. And I just froze. I thought, well, I've been doing so well. I've been doing everything great. I can't have dessert. What's going on? And then when I thought about that message of Feast Without Fear, it all became much clearer. So we're going to talk a bit about your authoring and your Facebook groups and everything else. But before we do, there's a couple of myths around intermittent fasting, which I'd really like to clear up. Obviously, you and I have talked about a couple of these before, but there's a lot of newcomers since then that have come into it. But one of the things people often ask us is, can I brush my teeth while I fast?
Please do. You know, that's a great question. And it comes from a good place, right? Our goal is to keep insulin low. You know, keeping insulin low, that's really one of the best health markers out there. I'm reading very slowly Why We Get Sick by Dr. Benjamin Bickman. Have you read that yet, Graham?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
It's a fantastic, I mean, it really, you know, brings it all in. It just came out, I guess, like last year, maybe, I don't know. But it's really great. And it reinforces why we want to keep insulin low. So when people understand that if you taste something sweet, that can cause your body to release insulin, they're like, oh, well, they're brushing my teeth. It's got a sweetener in there. I can't do that either. But that's really, it's so very brief. You know, the way, you know, your body might release a little bit of insulin, but our bodies do that anyway, just in response to our changing blood sugar. Unless you know, your pancreas doesn't work because you're diabetic, your body is constantly releasing a baseline level of insulin. So brushing your teeth is so short, and it's not really, your brain is not like, now I'm eating food. Your body knows you're brushing your teeth, so it's really, really short. It's not the same at all as if you were drinking a diet soda, which happens over a long period of time, and it continues, and it sends that message over and over again. So please brush your teeth. It's very brief. there has been zero time during my entire journey where I felt like brushing my teeth was making me gain weight or keeping me from, you know, being in the clean fast. I know when I have broken my fast. You know, I was experimenting with things that people always ask about. One day, I was like, all right, we tell people, no, don't put cinnamon in your coffee. But one day I was like, you know, I'm about to open my window. I'm going to have some coffee now. I'm going to put a little cinnamon there just to see. Oh, Lord, I wanted to chew my arm off. I'm like, yep, there we go. You know, that's what it feels like when you break your fast. And brushing your teeth is not going to do that.
Okay, well, that's one myth busted. Thanks for that, Jen. Yeah. The second one is often we hear in a fasting community, and I mean, you've talked about this in your books and that sort of thing, and I think people really take it out of context myself. When you hear that message, you can eat whatever you want with intermittent fasting. And I like to say, I like to eat what makes me feel my greatest rather than what I eat whatever I want, because eating whatever I want made me as obese as what I was. And so how do people need to interpret that message, you can eat whatever you want?
You know, I never have sold my books as the way that the 8-hour diet guy did back in the day, when literally they're like, you can eat everything and anything as long as you eat it in an 8-hour window. Even if you go back to Delay, Don't Deny that I wrote in 2016, I talk in there, a lot of people maybe ignored that part where I talked about, even in an eating window, if you overeat, you're not going to see the weight loss you're looking for. You know, that it's still, you have to keep in mind that overeating is not ever going to be, you know, your weight loss. I when I write Fast, Feast, Repeat, I actually have a section in there that addresses the idea of eat whatever you want and what that means. And it's all in the emphasis of the words, okay? Eat whatever you want is my message to everyone. Emphasis on you. I'm not going to tell you what to eat. Eat whatever you want. And then over time, I mean, if you're eating nothing but ultra processed foods, that is not supporting your best health, whether you're eating it in an eating window or whether you're eating all day long. Those are not the foods that support good gut health or just health in general. But that's where I was when I started. I was eating a very ultra processed diet, and I had to start somewhere. And starting with intermittent fasting, that was a very healthy choice. So it was, for me, I needed to do intermittent fasting and then feel better and then have the motivation to gradually choose healthier foods for my body, because suddenly it wasn't just about weight loss. It was about vibrant health. My motivation changed along the way. But the way some people interpret that phrase is eat whatever you want, you know, like you're the college freshman in the dorm and at the cafeteria for the first time you're away from home, and you can literally just go crazy if you want because your mom isn't there saying don't eat five desserts or whatever. So it's a whole different, the wording may be the same, eat whatever you want versus eat whatever you want. And you really just have to be honest with yourself. And all throughout, really both books also, I talk about the idea of stopping when you're satisfied, and the idea of appetite correction, which is a terminology that was invented, as far as I know, by Dr. Bert Hearing. He has a book called Appetite Correction. And it's just a beautiful phrase for when you're in tune with your body's hunger and satiety signals. Your body tells you you've had enough. Last night I was eating dinner. I had a really large snack because I was hungrier, and really big snack. And then it was time for dinner. And honestly, if I hadn't had Chad, and Will is at home now, he's 22. If I hadn't had them, I might not have made dinner. But they were expecting dinner, so I made dinner. And halfway through my plate of food, my body said, you've had more food than you needed today. Stop eating. So I did. I stopped, and I still had gone a little too far. I ate a little bit more. I shouldn't have really probably had any of the dinner because I had already really had enough for the day, but it was a delicious dinner and I'd made it, and it was like sauteed creamed kale and I'd roasted parsnips and I wanted to eat them. And anyway, so I ate a little bit and then I'm like, I've just really had enough of this dinner. That's the power of appetite correction and learning to listen to your body. And wherever you are on the food continuum, whether you're like me when I first started on the ultra processed end, don't feel guilty about that. Because, you know, if you're doing intermittent fasting, you're taking charge of your health in a powerful way. You can change your food later if you feel like it. But you need to do it in a way that feels sustainable. If you're on the other side of the continuum, you know, the eating more whole foods, that's also great, but you still don't want to, you know, really overdo it. in your eating window. You want to stop when you're satisfied and learning to really tune in because it doesn't feel good to overeat. My stomach was like, a little bit too full. Should have stopped sooner.
The other thing is that I always say to people, you know, you got to work out what your trigger foods are. Like for me, I know I've learned what my trigger foods are.
That's true.
When it controls my weight. Like I know that bread will just blow me up, right? Or blow the scales to pieces because I look at a bread truck driving down the street, Jen, and I'm going to put on 3 pounds because just me and bread don't get on. Yet I love bread. Like I used to see your pictures in the DDD community of the beautiful table sitting with the old cow butter dish in the background, which I was still trying to get hold of. I still have
it. It's still there. Yeah.
I know.
Every night I eat bread. Yeah.
And you're a beautiful artisan bread. And I used to think, wow. And then now, if I do eat bread, it's got to be the best quality bread I can get. And now I think that's what we gravitate towards. And people say to me, oh, you must save a lot of money fasting. Well, not really, because I'll go out I'll spend $20, $30 on a really good steak. And whereas before, I might have spent $4 or $5 at the drive-thru. So there's that correlation where you don't really save a lot of money with intermittent fasting because then you go out and buy you clothes that you can buy, you buy you shoes, you buy better quality clothes, and they cost more money. So it sort of evens out a bit. But the other thing I wanted to mention that people often misunderstand is they often ask the question, how do I take medication when I'm fasting? And I always say to them, look, you need to take it as directed by your physician. If he says to you, you need to take that 3 times a day or you need to eat it with food, then you need to do something. So how do people actually get around that, Jen, if they have to take medication with food when they're fasting? What would you suggest?
Yeah, I find, first of all, you need to have this conversation with your doctor or pharmacist. Really, the pharmacist might be the best person to talk to because they've actually been trained more on the actual medications than sometimes our doctors. But you don't need to take it as the initial prescription. Maybe your doctor or your pharmacist can have a different idea for what you need to do. So tell them you're fasting, I guess. Always follow their advice. I think I said that in a clumsy way. Always follow their advice, but go back to them and say, I see that you've prescribed for me to take this 3 times a day with food. I'm doing intermittent fasting. Does that change the dosage at all? Does that change the timing? How can I, you know, see what they have to say? Because really, you know, it might not be as necessary as they initially said. And if you tell them that you're fasting, they might say, oh, or, you know, like if they say take this with your first meal, you might assume you have to take that at 8 in the morning with food, but maybe it's fine to wait till noon. And just having that conversation once your doctor or pharmacist knows you're doing intermittent fasting, that there is an appropriate way to take it that is different than what was initially recommended. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does, Jen. And
the second part is the answer might be you really do need to take it first thing in the morning with food. And if that is the case, after you've had that conversation and they're like, no, you really do need to take that first thing in the morning, you need to take it with food, then it's a matter of choosing something that's not going to give your body a huge insulin response. So, you know, fat gives us less of an insulin response. So you want to think of something that's high fat. You know, you might want to have it with just a little bit of heavy cream, for example, if it's something that is okay to have with dairy, because that'll kind of coat your stomach, which is a lot of why you need to take something with food. And also understand that you might be really hungry after that. But, you know, because your body has now got this food, this cream, and you might have to like really white knuckle it a little bit after that, but push through and, you know, hopefully you'll get right back to that fasted state soon. So it's really just a matter of first really clarifying with your doctor or pharmacist the schedule needs to really be once they understand you're an intermittent faster, and then figuring out what will interrupt your fast the least if you really do need to take it with food early in the fast.
Yeah, and I think it's important for people to realize that I'm not a doctor. I mean, you are a doctor of sorts, Jen, but
doctorate.
doctorate. But you know what I mean? But sometimes people ask questions in the groups and that sort of thing, and you say to them, look, well, you're trying to seek medical advice here, and you need to go and see the right people about this because we're not trained to answer that question. So when you are asking a question in the group, I would suggest to people, whether it's my group or Jen's group, then sort of think about it. If this sounds like a medical question, maybe it's a discussion I need to have with my doctor, rather than asking people that may not be trained, because some people give some pretty weird answers at times. But
oh, totally. Jen,
speaking of groups and your work as an author, I really want to get into that now. And let's go back to where it all started with your author work, Delay Don't Deny, your first book, and the book that changed so many lives around the world, including mine. And I'm internally grateful to you for that. And I always get quite choked up when I talk about it and how grateful I am to you, because it really was a game changer for me, because what it did was it showed me that something was so simple and yet so effective. And when you put it into place and practice, and I used to go back and read through it and look at it, and I'd say, wow, this is so great. And, you know, and then after a few months, I was away, you know, and I just thought, I was convinced that it actually worked. And that was the big thing for me when I started seeing all the NSVs and health benefits, what we'll talk about later. But so, delay, don't deny. How did it come about? Why did you write it? And just run through your sequence of books, and we'll get up to Cleanish.
Okay. Well, you know, at the time when I first, I'll have to go back to 2015. And when I was in 2014, 2015, when I, you know, was trying to do the keto diet, for example, and failing miserably, that was when I was on Facebook early. You know, finally we were all getting into Facebook. It was 2014. That was becoming a place we went all the time. So I joined a ton of keto groups. And, you know, you could ask questions, you could get support. That was nice. You know, I met people that were helpful. And so when I started doing fasting, same thing. I joined groups. I found groups and found places where I got support. That was also helpful. Then as I was going along, I was in a certain group that was a fasting group that was, you know, tied into one of the fasting approaches that had a book related to it. And I started to realize, like one of the premises was, like you said before, eat all that you want in your window and you will lose weight. And people were really taking that to the idea of, like, well, I'm eating within this window. Why am I not losing weight? I had five meals in this window. What's happening? And I'm like, people were giving shoddy advice, right? And I could see it. And I'm like, really? That, you know, that is not good advice. I started people, you know, noticing. I'm like, I want a group where it can be me and my friends that are, because I, you know, you have friends that start doing it because you're doing it. And you're like, well, join this group. This group is fantastic. And then you're in the group and you're like, yeah, but they're giving really terrible advice. That's not good advice that they're giving. And so I was like, I don't want to be part of a group that, and sending people to a group where the advice is not solid. I'm a teacher. You know, I want, you know, I would like make a comment and then someone would come along and bash my advice. And I'm like, well, if you go back to the book, that's not what he even says in the book. You know, it's not even what's happening. And I'm like, I just can't. So I started my first Facebook group in it was August of 2015. And that was the one meal a day intermittent fasting support group on Facebook. And it was literally me and just my friends who were doing intermittent fasting with me. And it was after I had been, you know, looking back at the Fast Five book from Dr. Bert Hearing, and he actually has the wording in there. He says, you're only eating one meal a day. He says that in his book. So I'm like, light bulbs went off. And I'm like, we shouldn't be trying to force as many meals as we can into our eating window. This 5-hour window is meant to be one real meal and not just eat, 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 eat. Because, you know, if I have a diet and it tells me eat, 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 I'm going to follow it. So I was like, I'm going to create a place just for me and my friends where we can come and just talk about things ourselves. And so there were like 30 of us in there. Then over time, it started to grow. We were the only one meal a day group on Facebook for a long, long time, the only one. We were the original. We were the only one. And so people started to just wander in from all over the world. And I'm like, who are these people? What are they doing? Why are they here? I don't know them. But I was enjoying, you know, guiding people through what I felt was, you know, a successful approach to intermittent fasting. And over time, we had a pinned post in the group. And the pinned post got longer and longer and longer because we wanted people, you know, to come into the group who were like-minded. Because I know, just like you, my goal is not to spend time on Facebook arguing with people who disagree with me. That is not how I want to spend my time. I created the group so like-minded people who felt similar to me about how fasting would be could come in and we could support one another. I don't want to argue all day about, you know, diet sodas. If you want to be in this group, then here's what we believe. I would love to have you, but I don't want to argue with you. There's plenty of other groups out there, right? So the pinned post got longer and longer and longer, and I was pointing people to it. And then other people were like, well, what should I read to really understand this? And by this point, the obesity code had come out in March of that year. It was 2016. I loved the obesity code. It actually clarified, you know, to me what the clean fast should look like, but it wasn't really a manual of how to do it, right? And then the complete guide to fasting came out. And again, there were so many things in there that I didn't want to point people to it because I was like, well, you know, there's some good stuff in there, but ignore all the parts about blah, 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 because I don't agree with that. Like, don't put cream in your coffee. Don't, you know, have a diet soda, whatever. Don't drink the broth, but everything else is good. So I'm like, we really need a book that is simple, you know, because the obesity code was incredibly complex. We need a book that's simple, somebody could read it quickly and know what to do, that, you know, explained, you know, how to fast clean, even though I had not, you know, coined the terminology fasting clean yet. That didn't happen until 2017 in my Delay Don't Deny group. That's when we came up with that fasting clean terminology. I wish I'd come up with it sooner because it would be in Delay Don't Deny. But I want a book that can really communicate this to people. And they don't have to read this whole pinned post, but they can just go read Delay Don't Deny. And I'm like, here's the one to read. So that's why I wrote it. And thank goodness for self-publishing. You and I both know that that's the barrier. You know, the barrier to the publishing industry keeps a lot of people from sharing information, or it used to. Now with self-publishing, you can get your message out there. And that was what I did. I wrote the book and I put it out there. And I'm like, okay, hopefully this will help a few people. I just really didn't know what to expect. And so, you know, it's really grown into this whole, you know, what I have going on now, a whole new career. But that led me to the Delay Don't Deny intermittent fasting support group that I started with initially. That one I started in late 2016 as I was writing the book, Delay Don't Deny. And that group has grown and grown and grown. And then it led to the Delay Don't Deny Advanced group, which was only for people who had actually read Delay Don't Deny, because I didn't want to keep everybody out of the groups. You know, I wanted people to be able to join, but then I expected them to read, you know, to educate themselves. And so that was the place people could go after they'd read it, where we were having just a little more of a educated kind of discussion because they understood the principles. And that was really important because, you know, I'm a teacher and I'm very big on, you know, empower yourself by learning the information. You know, when you learn the information, then I will help you apply it. But I don't want to constantly be telling you the same basic information all the time, you know, because here's this book that I wrote that will do that for you. I want to help you implement the information, not constantly tell you what to do individually, if that makes sense. But the groups just got so big. You mentioned by the time that I left Facebook, we had gotten to almost 500,000 combined members. And it just became too big to manage. I heard someone say something that, I mean, it hurts when anyone criticizes you, right? But someone, you know, sometimes the moderators of my Facebook group, after I left, they were keeping the regular group going. And so they would show me sometimes, they're like, this comment just made me so mad. And they showed it to me. And of course, then it hurt my feelings. But the comment was, oh, Jen thinks she's too big for Facebook. And I'm like, you know, gosh, that is not at all how I feel. I never felt like I was, you know, too big for Facebook. Really, though, the problem was Facebook got too big for me. I knew I couldn't manage it well. And, you know, I took a lot of pride in those groups and the amount of effort that it took. I don't think people really understood how much effort it took to run three large, thriving groups with so many diverse members from around the world. And it became, I wasn't able to help people or mentor them. All I was doing was management, group management, and, you know, trying to put out fires and soothe people's feelings. And it wasn't about, let me help you with fasting. It was like, uh-oh, this person's mad because we didn't let her ask her lemon question about lemon water. And uh-oh, this person's mad because she said, this works for me. And then we deleted her comment. Now she's mad. I'm like, you know, this is not bringing pleasure to my life at all. And I just want to help people with intermittent fasting. And I want to talk to them one-on-one like we used to could do in the day when my group had 30 people. And so I was like, you know, this is just, so I walked away and I did it for myself and my quality of life, but also because I knew that there could be a place where I could have that same close, high quality group again, but it wasn't going to be on Facebook ever again. And so that's when I started my off Facebook private community that people, it's got a paid membership. And some people got really upset about that. And they're like, what? How dare you monetize your community? And I'm like, you know, I'm working this 24/7, 365 days a year. And so I'm not sorry that I would like to earn a living from my work. And so, I mean, I'm pretty much bet almost every listener who has a job is earning money from their work. And so it's a labor of love for me. You know, it's also my work. So I am loving the private community that we've got going now. We made one wrong turn. We chose a platform that ended up being just really clunky. It looked great on paper and they sold it so beautifully and they had big name clients. And I'm like, oh, if it's good enough for this big name university's alumni program, it's going to be fabulous. No, it was not good. And we tried to make that platform work. Once people started joining, we realized, oh, it's not working as well once the people joined after we had it all set up and it was beautiful. So then the features started to break. And then we were in September, we're like, we got to pivot to somewhere else. So we've moved the community one more time for the last time to the Circle platform. And it is just fantastic. And it's finally what I envisioned. We have members who are there that are happy to be there and supporting one another. Before I left Facebook, we started getting flagged all the time for bullying because we would say things like, once you're fat adapted, you'll feel better. Bullying, because the artificial intelligence just saw that as you're fat. They just picked out those two words, you're fat. But in the context of the sentence, once you're fat adapted, you'll feel better. That's not bullying. It's not even saying you're fat, it's you're fat adapted, which is a thing. It's so, you know, we don't have to worry about that. I can tell people they're fat adapted all day long and no artificial intelligence. There's no ads. It's just us giving each other support and encouragement. And it's really got that true community feel. So it's like I've come full circle and I'm really loving the community interaction again after those few stressful years where it just got too big for me to handle and still live my life in a sane way.
I know, Jenna. I know exactly what you're talking about. We sort of talked about Fast, Feast, Repeat in a previous podcast that you're on here on the Fasting Highway. So if anybody wants to hear about Fast, Feast, Repeat, the New York Times bestseller that Jen wrote, go back to that one. But we're going to talk about Cleanish before we wind up the podcast because I really want to get that in. So just tell us about Cleanish, what it's all about. It's not necessarily an intermittent fasting book as such. I mean, I think I recall there was only one chapter on fasting as such.
Right.
But, I mean, right through the book, it really is a great message. And just before we get started on that, I want to tell you the story about Cleanish. I was talking to my accountant, right, and I had my tax return, and I said, oh, is my, you know, the book's clean and everything else. And he sort of hesitated, and he said, oh, they're Cleanish. And I started laughing. I couldn't stop laughing about him saying my books were Cleanish, you know. And then I sort of thought about your book, and I said, I know a really good book for you. So anyway, let's tell us about Cleanish, why you wrote it, what's it about, and how can people get it?
All right. I'll be glad to. And, you know, really, it came about because after you write a New York Times bestseller, suddenly your editor is like, what are you going to write next? And she was like, what intermittent fasting book are you going to write next? And I was like, I am not going to write another intermittent fasting book ever. And they're like, what? You know, because the model is you write about one thing and then you just keep putting that same book out in various versions over and over again. I don't really know, but you know, I can't imagine that I would need to rewrite a whole new book and there's not going to be a new, better way to do intermittent fasting. I put it all in Fast, Feast, Repeat. That book is going to, I think, stand the test of time. It's still going to be a good resource in 20 years. That's how I designed it to be. And so I was like, you know, I would love to write something else, but I have some different ideas. And so that's where Cleanish came about. And it's all about, you know, really, and I have to credit Melanie Avalon for anyone who listens to the Intermittent Fasting podcast. You know, she's definitely on a clean journey. She's not ish, she's clean. And so she's pointed me down some, you know, some different rabbit holes with that. Like, for example, with the Beauty Counter products that she's like, you got to try them. I'm like, no, my products are fine and what I'm doing is fine. She's like, you're going to love them. Please try them. I'm like, but no, I'm fine. And then she's like, mailed me some. She just mailed them to me. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to try them. And then I was like, okay, I love them. Then I started really digging in. And it's really just kind of been the whole convergence, the whole journey. Like, the better I started to eat, the better I wanted to eat, the better I felt. Well, the same kind of thing, like when I really started looking at the products, I was like, oh, gosh, look at these products that I have. They're not that great. And so I started, you know, going down the rabbit hole. And I'm like, you know, I would really like to write a book that helps people make the transition in a non-judgmental way, again, from where they are right now and where they'd like to be. And I think anyone who understands, you know, the modern era and, you know, the chemicals, and when I say chemicals, obviously water is a chemical. So I'm not talking about chemical in the scientific chemistry book definition. I'm talking about, obviously, the chemicals that we want to avoid, the ones they're adding to things, the ones that might be harmful to us. I think every person who's read anything about health understands that, you know, we're in a different world now. So I feel like all of us know we should be doing something, but we're like not really sure what, because it's confusing, because you can read this thing that says one thing and then something else that says the opposite. So it's just a matter of educating yourself. And so I was able to luckily sell the idea to my editor, which was not easy, because once you become known as like the intermittent fasting expert, they're like, that's all you're allowed to talk about now. Just intermittent fasting for the rest of your life. Just that. And I'm like, okay, well, no. But, you know, the whole title of the book is Cleanish, with the subtitle Eat Mostly Clean, Live Mainly Clean, and Unlock Your Body's Natural Ability to Self-Clean. That's where the fasting fits in that one chapter in the self-cleaning section. You know, our body has a lot of amazing self-cleaning mechanisms. Intermittent fasting is one of them, and it may well be the most powerful that we have in our toolbox. But I also didn't want to write a book that was only for people who wanted to do intermittent fasting. I mean, there are millions and millions and millions of people out there who want to, you know, clean up what they're eating, what they're using, the cleaning products, your personal care items, but they don't want to do intermittent fasting yet. I say yet because hopefully after they read it, they'll be like, maybe I will do a little bit of that. And then they'll become believers, so I can like hook them into the family that direction a little bit. But I wanted a book that appealed to everybody so we could get the message out there. So when they're reading Cleanish because they want to improve their life and be healthier, they'll see that bit about intermittent fasting, and that might lead them into it. But they're not going to be like, oh, I can't read this because I don't want to do fasting.
Yeah, that's really great, Jen. I was in a car wash the other day, actually, and I came out the other side, and I got out, and I had a look at the car, and I said, yeah, Cleanish. And I got back in, and away I went. So it's something you can really apply. I mean, even with your fasting, that's true. Cleanish. I mean, let's face it, we can't be perfect every single day. We can't be pristine in everything we do. So if we can get to that point of being cleanish and cleaning up our act, like you said, I mean, if you live in a cleaner environment, you know, it might be a case of having to chuck out some clutter in your house or clean out your cupboards, yep, or whatever it may be, then it really changes your mindset. You sort of start setting things up and you think to yourself, well, if I can get cleanish, which is the thematic of your book, and I think it's a great book, and I really recommend that people get it and have a look at it, then I think our journey is going to be so much better with fasting as well, because we start thinking about that, yep, cleanish thing. And for people that may be doing the dirty fasting out there that are listening, and we've been over that several times, Jen, as we know, it's not the right, mm-hmm, way to go. And I mean, if you're not clean fasting, you're not really fasting at all. We know that message.
That's right. Can I pop in something real quick? The idea of clean-ish does not apply to the fast. I'm a big believer that clean-ish is what you want, but during the fast, you want to fast completely clean. You know, I'm not. This book is not suddenly saying be clean-ish during the fast too, because if you want the benefits from the fast, you really do need to fast clean. So fast completely clean, and then, you know, the rest of your life, there's the cleanish part, but suddenly this is not where I'm like, yeah, you can fast cleanish too. So the cleanish comes in where, you know, one day you might have a longer eating window because you went to brunch, and that's okay. But, you know, if you're, you know, putting cream in your coffee, I'm not going to tell you that's fasting, because it isn't, because cream is food for baby cows. And, you know, we're not fasting if we're eating. You know, if you're going to a fasted, if you've got to have a medical procedure done and the doctor said you need to be in the fasted state, they're not going to say put a lot of cream in your coffee before you come. That's not going to medically be fine. You're only allowed to have like what, water before the procedure, you know? So I just wanted to pop that in there. I didn't want anybody to get the wrong idea that suddenly I'm like cleanish about the fast, because I'm not.
Yeah. No, we know that, Jen. And I mean, we know it's a strictly clean fast. And I mean, that's how you operate. That's how I operate. Jen, I can't tell you how great it's been to catch up with you today. I could literally talk with you for hours. And as you know, and if anybody wants to hear more about fast, feast, repeat and some of the other things Jen and I talked about, go back to episode 8 of this podcast, a long way back now, Jen, 100 episodes. And wow, you're about to hear more. I know it's been crazy, but yeah. But Jen, thank you for joining me here on the Fasting Highway today. And I look forward to getting over to America, possibly next year, and catching up and making sure we get over to on that cruise or something over the Bahamas this time. That'd be great.
Well, we'll definitely do something when you're here. I don't know if it's going to be a cruise, but
yeah,
that ship may have sailed for me, but
yeah, same here.
I will do something, you know. We have our beach cottage now in the Myrtle Beach area, and that is a great place for events.
Well, that sounds like a plan, Jen. So we might have to do a live podcast from Myrtle Beach at some stage. But
that would be amazing.
You take care, and thank you so much for joining us, and I'll talk to you soon. Oh, thank you so much, Jen. Absolutely delightful to catch up with you again, and I can't thank you enough for everything that you've done for me over the years and the support that you've shown, and I really appreciate it. And thank you for everything that you do and all the thousands of people around the world that you've helped on their fasting journey. As we mentioned there prior to the podcast, folks, don't forget you can join the Fasting Highway Facebook group. If you are interested in my own story, you can find that on Amazon in the book, The Fasting Highway. You can get that both paperback and Kindle. And anyway, until next week, folks, be well, be safe, and remember, clean fasting is everlasting.